For Public Radio News, it's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This week, Vice President Joe Biden's task force on preventing gun violence kicked into high gear and yesterday met with the National Rifle Association and other gun rights groups. After the White House session, Biden acknowledged that no one recommendation would eliminate all shootings, but that there has got to be, he said, some common ground to at least reduce the possibility of future tragedy. However, a representative from the NRA said the administration was eliminating common ground from the start by, as he put it, pushing failed solutions and attacking the Second Amendment. These conflicting views have been echoed across the country in the weeks since the Newtown shootings horrified the nation. And this week on The Exchange, we've been looking at some of the major issues that keep coming up: access to mental health care, violence in media, and today, gun laws and whether those laws should be changed. It's a debate that New Hampshire has been engaged in even before this tragedy. For example, the Granite State last year adopted a Stand Your Ground law, which broadened people's rights to respond with deadly force when they feel threatened. Today in The Exchange, it's the last in our three-day look at the conversations surrounding Newtown, and let's hear from you. Given the mass shootings we've seen in recent years, should gun sales and ownership be restricted in some fashion? Or do you think that's the wrong approach? Would restrictions harm Second Amendment rights and limit individual self-defense? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Keep those emails short. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. Joining us in this studio is J.R. Hull. He's a Republican representative from Dunbarton, a member of the Children and Family Law Committee, and a board member of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. And Representative Hull, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me on.
Also with us, Steve Shurtleff, Democratic representative from Penacook, House Majority Leader, a retired U.S. Marshal. Representative Shurtleff is sponsoring legislation that would repeal the state's Stand Your Ground law that I mentioned. And Steve Shurtleff, welcome back and good to see you, too.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, and gentlemen, both of you, boy, right after the shootings, there was renewed outcry to restrict access to guns. I think I'll turn to you first, Steve Shurtleff. What went through your head as you heard that debate once again in this country?
I think we're all shocked by the tragedy in Newtown. The news was just devastating, and we had never seen anything quite like that in our country. And to think of those 20 young children, being a grandfather of a 7-year-old granddaughter, Sarah, who started first grade this year, you know, my heart went out to those families. In some respects, I guess every dark cloud has a silver lining. And if there's a silver lining in this terrible tragedy, it's the renewal of this discussion about gun safety, gun rights, and gun ownership.
What do you think, Representative Hull? What went through your mind those first couple days when people were really talking about this?
As a parent, right, all of us think about the children. And it grieves me for the loss of those lives, but it grieves me that by legislation we forbid people from protecting themselves. We ban the ability of the administrators and the teachers to be involved to protect their children, right? We encourage and we allow the teachers, and we want the teachers to instruct the kids, but then we forbid them by law to protect the kids.
By allowing them to have guns in the school.
Yes.
Yeah. So how do you, sort of fast forwarding, how do you folks feel about the conversation this week? As I said, Vice President Biden's task force kicked into high gear this week. He held conversations with the NRA and other gun groups yesterday. How do you feel, Representative Hull, about Joe Biden's statements that he sees consensus emerging on two items: one, universal background checks, and two, limits on high capacity weapons, such as those used in mass shootings? First of all, universal background checks. Is that an area of common ground? What do you think?
I don't think there's common ground on either area. And on universal background checks, this is them trying to close what has been fictitiously known for years as the gun show loophole. Well, the gun show loophole is one citizen who shows up at a gun show who wants to talk to another citizen as a private sale, which happens all the time elsewhere. But if it happens within the closed doors of a gun show, it's now called the gun show loophole. There is nothing. There is no loophole there. This is a private transaction between two private parties. And it's always been available.
So no common ground in terms of university background checks.
And then for high-capacity magazines, it's not about the size of the magazine. The high-capacity magazines are used by the people who go to the range and spend time learning to shoot well. And this is where citizens who tend to be more accurate than the police, who spend time practicing. That's the reason for the high-round magazines.
You know, we are going to have in a couple of minutes a gun shop owner on. So we'll talk a little bit more about the universal background checks there. But Steve Shurtleff, what do you think? Is universal background check common ground in your opinion?
I think it is. I think it's a step in the right direction. We all know that there's a Second Amendment right to bear arms. But with rights come responsibilities. And we want to make sure those that are purchasing firearms are the type of citizens that have a right to have them, whether they've had a mental health issue, whether they've a convicted felon. We want to make sure that those people aren't getting weapons. You know, I look at firearm owners, 97% of them are responsible individuals, and being a firearm owner myself. But there is that small minority that is getting firearms in this country that shouldn't be.
What do you think, Representative Shurtleff, about the NRA statement saying that armed guards, armed teachers at schools could prevent tragedies like Newtown? And Representative Hull said earlier he was saddened that we don't allow teachers to, as he put it, protect children.
I saw a comment, I think it was in the Union Leader, that my friend from Dunbarton made, that said if the teachers in Newtown had been armed, this tragedy wouldn't have happened. I take exception to that comment. To me, it's like handing a glass of water to a drowning person. It's just adding fuel to the fire. It's not the responsibility of a teacher to have to be provide safety by carrying a firearm in his classroom. I think, with all due respect to Representative Hull, I think that's somewhat irresponsible. And I'm surprised that the NRA would come out and make a statement like that the teachers should be given firearms. It's adding to the problem, not solving it.
And a follow-up for you, Representative Hull. There have been mass shootings in recent years, including this year, in a movie theater, a shopping mall, workplaces, university campuses, and then again, most recently, this elementary school in Connecticut. So do we need armed guards at all these places? I mean, we're only talking about schools. What about all these other places?
So let's look at other countries that have similar issues, right? And Israel comes to mind, where they have an active threat of terrorism all the time. Children are valuable, right? They're a prime target for terrorists to go after, yet they don't have the same gun violence in the schools that we do, per capita or overall. And why is that? Well, they either hire staff or they allow their teachers to carry. Okay? This is important. The children are important. Violence is not going down, although New Hampshire in relative to New England and the U.S. relative to the world have very low violence per capita compared to the U.K., for instance, it doesn't mean it's zero, and it's not going to be zero. So we have to find a way for those couple of percent of the population that are violent, okay, to make sure that they can be that we can protect the individuals from them.
Yeah.
And one way to do it is to find them and try and lock them up ahead of time. But I don't know that you're always going to find them. Someone's going to filter through the cracks. And even in the Newtown shooting, the individual had tried to buy a firearm, right, was prevented, right? He went out and obtained them effectively illegally.
From his mother.
Yes.
Yeah. Though getting back to the question, okay, you mentioned schools and kids, and for sure that tugs at all our hearts. But movie theaters, shopping malls, workplaces, how do we avoid those?
If we go through all of these mass murders, and mass murder by the FBI statistics, I believe, is four or more people murdered at a common point by a common person. All but the Gifford shooting have been in gun-free zones. And then we start looking at other data that shows, oh, this was an attempted murder, or someone was shot, they ran to the theater just a week or so after, within the last several weeks, there was an off-duty police officer who was carrying or something who was able to apprehend the guy.
So gun-free zones are part of the problem?
Part of the problem, not part of the solution.
What do you think, Representative Shurtleff?
Well, I think yesterday when Vice President Biden was giving his press conference in Washington, many newscasts broke in with a report of a shooting at a school in California where a 16-year-old brought a shotgun into school. Now, there was a school that had an armed security officer on duty. The young man was able to injure one person before a teacher was able to talk him out of hurting anybody else and putting the gun down.
Talk him out of it.
Exactly.
He or she didn't have a gun.
No.
Talk.
No. But it, But the point I make is that they had armed security, but still we had an incident. So I think our problem is we've got to go to the source, and that's who's getting these guns, not once they get to a point of committing an offensive act.
Well, let's talk about that. Who, and then later on maybe we can talk about what, like what kinds of weapons we're talking about. But let me also invite our listeners to join us, gentlemen. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, the last in our three-part series, looking at some of the conversations in this country post-Newtown. We're looking this morning at gun control and gun rights. 1-800-892-6477. Is our number. And let's tackle who then, gentlemen, and Representative Hole. I think that's an area where you and Representative Shurtleff probably agree. Who? How do we, in your opinion, make sure guns don't end up in the hands of, you know, for lack of a better word, the bad guys?
Well, I mean, I have 3 pages worth of mass murders over the last couple of years, right? And we start looking at this. And this, I'm glad you guys covered this. What happened? What drug was involved, what date, and where it was, right? And in all of these cases, it's antidepressant or one drug after another. I'm glad you had a discussion of that.
Yeah,
because,
we did mental health on Wednesday.
Right. The issue is we're trying to take firearms away, but the issue may not be solved by that at all. In fact, I believe it will not be. The problem will be made worse. The problem really is we've taken, in the case of psychotropic drugs, and started handing out medications, and these people may go from being stable to unstable very quickly. Why don't we address that?
What do you think, Representative Shurtleff? This is something that has come up. We're barking up the wrong tree here.
We know we have a problem in New Hampshire with mental health, and the programs have been underfunded. We're seeing more and more individuals with mental health issues going back into the criminal justice system where they should be in the New Hampshire hospital or in receiving private psychiatric care. But the issue is who is going into gun shops, these gun shows rather, and buying these guns in private sales. That to me is a major concern, and that's something that we need to address.
All right, and we'll talk a lot more after a short break and start taking your calls too. So if you're on the line, stay there. Our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And hang on, because we'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on grappling over gun laws coming up on The Exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. It's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. Card-carrying members of NHPR can take advantage of special benefits all over the state. Restaurants, museums, theaters, lodgings, new businesses are signing up every week to offer discounts to NHPR member cardholders. Visit nhpr.org for all available discounts and more information about the NHPR member card. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Living Innovations, with fulfilling job opportunities for those interested in helping seniors and peoples with disabilities at home and in the community. Online at livinginnovations.com. And from the Wealth Management Group at Merrimack County Savings Bank, trust and wealth management services provided by advisors committed to your financial needs. TheMerrimack.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a look at gun control and gun rights after the Newtown shooting. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Given Newtown, given the mass shootings we've seen in recent years, do you think gun sales and gun ownership should be restricted in some way? Or is that, in your opinion, the wrong approach? Do you agree with the NRA that proposals like universal background checks are failed solutions? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And first up is Ashley in Concord. Hi, Ashley. Thanks for calling in today. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I'm wondering, is it true that all gun owners at gun shows must still get government position before transferring guns at gun shows?
Okay, Ashley, thanks a lot for calling in. Do you know Representative Hole?
So at gun shows, there's sales of firearms from two different types, two large buckets of dealers that are there. There are dealers who are registered FFLs. They are registered by the federal government, and they have to do a background check on any transfer of any firearm. There are individual collectors, okay, who come and typically purchase. They may have their own collection. Sometimes they decide to sell or trade one of those. Those individual collectors, who may also have a table, are not required to hold to the same standard. But neither can they buy from any of the manufacturers or distributors directly. They have to go through a licensed dealer.
So do you feel that that provides enough of a check on who's buying?
Yeah, because at some point there is traceability from the manufacturer. I mean, time and time again, additional background checks are not solving this, because if someone is intent on doing harm, they will work around the system. They will go off into the black market and purchase something. That will not solve the problem. Okay, the tighter we make those controls, the more we drive the criminal element, okay, into the black market to purchase these.
You know, that's an issue that, boy, has come up so many times, Representative Shurtleff, and I've done dozens of shows on guns over my many years in this position. What do you think of that? That, you know, people who want to do something dreadful, like this most recent shooting in Newtown, are going to get the guns anyway. The background checks aren't going to help.
You know, I think we can make a difference through laws, and I think that something has to be done basically at the federal level. But we can deter some of these people that are getting guns that shouldn't. As Representative Hull said, I can go to a gun show. I own a couple of handguns. I can bring them to a gun show and sell them to private individuals. I don't know who's buying them. I don't know if that person's got a felony conviction or suffers from mental health problems. It's a simple transaction, and they walk out the door. That's my concern. It's a double standard. We can say to those that have federal firearm licenses, you must go through a federal background check when you sell a gun to make sure that you're selling to the right person. But the person sitting next to you at a gun show, a private individual, is free to sell to whomever they wish.
What do you think about that concern, Representative Hull?
Actually, according to New Hampshire statutes, under RSA 159, you're not free to sell to whomever you wish. That's right now, those restrictions have been in place for years. You can only sell to a person personally known to him or her. I mean, it's very specific in the language. So you can't just go up to a gun show and find somebody walking down one of the aisles and do a transaction.
You cannot by law. But
by law in New Hampshire.
Could Representative Shurtleff and you, if you were both at the gun show, could he kind of
pretend
like, oh, well, yeah, no, we know each other. Sure.
But that is what's on the books already. I don't agree I would go further and say that, again, if someone wants to do harm, they're going to go find a means of doing harm. And whether it's a firearm or whether it's a baseball bat, whether it's a car, it doesn't matter. If they're intent on doing evil, they will find a tool to do it. So these restrictions are not helping.
Let's bring another voice into our conversation, gentlemen. Bob Lee is with us, owner of Lee's Gun Shop in Hudson. Bob Lee, thanks for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
What do you make of this whole conversation, Mr. Lee, about gun control after this latest massacre in Connecticut and 2012 overall being a year where we saw several of these? I just wonder what goes through your mind.
Well, I think a lot of things need to be looked at without a doubt. As far as the gun show stuff that the other gentleman was just talking about, I believe one way to control part of this, I mean, he's right. The bad guy's the bad guy. And if he wants a weapon, he's going to get a weapon, whether it be a knife, a bat, a club, a gun, whatever. But I believe that some ways of taking care of this is the only people who can sell firearms are federally licensed dealers. Okay, not meaning that you can't sell to your friend, but you have to go through me or another dealer to do that. That way there, the form is filled out, you are checked out, or your friend is, whoever's buying the gun from you, and the government has deemed or the state has deemed that they are okay to own that gun. Okay, right now what happens at the gun shows, and the gentleman that made the comment that New Hampshire law says that you can't sell a gun, that is a handgun. Okay, I'm not supposed to transfer a handgun, not me as a dealer, me as a private individual. I can't sell a handgun to you unless I personally know you.
Mm-hmm.
As far as long guns go, I can sell it to anybody I want.
I see. So there is a difference between the rules surrounding gun shows, such as the ones that are held here in Concord at Everett Arena, and your shop, Mr. Lee.
Correct. Meaning, in other words, I could go to the gun show as a just a consumer with a long gun that I want to sell. I can put it over my back. They make sure it's unloaded when I go through the door. I have a dial down the barrel of the gun, says gun for sale, $200. You're in that gun show looking around. You tap me on the back, and you turn around and say, I'd like that gun. You give me $200. You walk out the door with the gun. No background check, no nothing. Now, where I didn't need to know you because it's a long gun, for all I know, you just robbed a 7-Eleven. I have no way of knowing that. At least if it's required that if you're going to sell a gun, it has to go through a dealer, that person who just bought the gun or you buying it would have to go through a background check.
What do you think?
So if you're somebody who's bad or if you're somebody who's a bad person and it's known, you're not going to be able to get the gun.
What do you think about Vice President Biden's call for universal background checks, no matter what the situation, Mr. Lee?
I don't believe that'll work. Universal background check in what sense? Define the universal check that he's talking about. I haven't seen it thrown in front of me to be very specific. If you're saying anybody that buys a gun should have to have a background check, if they buy them through a dealer, that's already there.
Right.
So the universal background check means just what I said, consumers cannot sell guns to each other without using a dealer. Well, then that's the solution to that, and I'm okay with that.
Have you ever had to turn somebody down, Mr. Lee? You know, they look good on paper when they came into your shop. You didn't see anything in the database, but you just felt funny about selling a gun to them.
I have. And to be honest with you, I have the final say, and the federal government will tell you that. The person can back pass a background check. It doesn't mean that I have to give them the gun. It's my store. I have to take on some responsibility as a gun dealer to say, you know, the person just doesn't seem right to me. They're here and they're angry. There's a bunch of scenarios. I judge a lot of people by the fact, can they stand there, talk to me, and look me in the eye? If somebody can't look me, if they seem nervous, if they're fidgety, I have denied a couple of people. It's very rare that it happens, but it does happen. And do I know whether or not I did the, you know, I made a mistake by denying him or not? No. I never read about him in the paper, so I don't know, but I feel better that I didn't do something that maybe I shouldn't have done. Except that feeling, I guess, is what you go on sometimes.
You're going with your gut there, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we got a call a few weeks back when we did a program right after the Newtown shootings, Mr. Lee, and we got a call from a gun shop owner who said, look, I want to sell safely, like you do, but right now I don't have enough information. For example, he said, I don't have access to somebody's mental health record, so unless they've committed a criminal act, I can't tell if they pose a threat. What do you think about that?
That's a real hot topic. I understand people's rights to privacy. My thought is on it that I think those records should be available, but maybe not on a widespread case. It should be a case where, let's say, I'm your doctor. Okay, and once again, this is just my thoughts on it for what they're worth. Once again, I'm your doctor, and I've determined that you are a person who is mentally unstable to the point where you should not be able to have a weapon. One of the things they could do would be to say, okay, we're going to make doctors responsible for letting the federal government know, or the Bureau of ATF&E, know that this person is someone who should not possess a firearm. Okay, that way there, you can't just get into anybody's medical records unless a doctor himself feels or herself feels that this person should not have one. And then those people are the ones that are on file with AT, you know, the Bureau. Now, with that being said, you could always have a case where you have a doctor who is an anti-gun person, so it just says, hey, everybody that comes into my office, I deem them not fit to be able to have a gun. And if that's the case and you get denied because of a doctor, of what a doctor should say, possibly the federal government pays to have a second opinion just to make sure that, you know, everything's staying above board. They do a psychiatric examination or whatever it is, and it comes out that, no, there's nothing wrong with this person. They can have a gun.
You know,
so I believe that record should be there, but it just can't be widespread to where you can just grab anybody's medical records.
There's been a lot of talk this week, especially about this issue, given the vice president's task force and so forth. And just real quickly, Mr. Lee, what are your hopes? What are your hopes for what will come out of this process? The vice president's supposed to release his recommendations on Tuesday next week. What do you hope comes out of all this?
my hope that comes out of it as a gun enthusiast and a gun dealer is that when it's all said and done, they look at it and realize that the gun is a tool, like a hammer, a car, a pencil, a bat, whatever you want to use. You can't blame tools for what individuals do. A perfect example that I use with people when they come in the shop, if you and your family come in here and you walk out the door and the bar next door to me, a drunk comes out, gets in his car, and kills everybody but you and your family. So all of you are dead on the ground being run over by a car. You don't go sue Ford, Chevy, or Dodge. You go after the person who committed the crime. That's what needs to happen. Banning guns is not going to make the bad guy a good guy.
Okay. Bob Lee, good to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's Bob Lee, owner of Lee's Gun Shop in Hudson. Once again, the number for you to join us this hour is 1-800-892-6477. We have two state representatives here in studio who have often been on opposite sides of this issue. J.R. Hole, Republican from Dunbarton, and Steve Shurtleff, a Democrat from Penacook. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our callers now. Alex is waiting in Rochester. Hi, Alex. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can. Go ahead, Alex.
Yes, I myself am a person with a mental illness, and I also have a criminal record, although it's not a felony, it's a misdemeanor. And most people would look upon me as a potential threat. I mean, the people who are concerned about those with mental illness being violent. And I remember watching the Wayne LaPierre, the vice president of the NRA, on TV. He was saying things like, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And he also was advocating for a national database of the mentally ill. And he was saying that, you know, he was demonizing people with mental illness, saying that people with mental illness are monsters and they're hearing voices and they're possessed by demons and that no one can understand them. And I thought, that's a little bit stigmatizing. And I thought, there was also information I saw on TV, on CNN, that 10,000 Americans a year are killed by gun violence. That's 34 a day. And also, according to information from NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 1 in 5 people worldwide have a mental illness. So that means 1 in 5 members of NRA probably have a mental illness. And so would the NRA want to have a database on their own, you know, people?
I see. So you're saying, Alex, it's kind of hard to distinguish good guy, bad guy. Is that your main point there?
Yes, I think it's not that simple. Mental illness is not a moral issue. It's a medical issue. And if you distinguish people who are violent as bad guys, I think, yes, they're bad in a certain sense. They're doing something that's bad. But maybe they're really sick, very, very sick people, but not bad people.
Okay. You know, and Alex, I just want to get our guest's thoughts here and also let you know, Alex, that we did cover mental illness in full on Wednesday. So you can go online and tap back into that show if you'd like. But I really appreciate your point. What do you think, to you, Representative Hole, first, to the difficulty, Alex points out, of deciding who is going to do something and who isn't?
That's my concern about tying back to the NICS database, our mental health records.
NICS is, remind me.
That's the National Instant Criminal Background Check System.
That's right.
And so far, a number of states have chosen not to take the extra federal money and to tie those two together. Because once you're into that database, it's like the no-fly list. There's been children on the no-fly list. Children aren't the threats, right? There's a data error. Something happens. Once you're on, you don't get off. So our concern is, maybe in the case of this gentleman from Rochester, that you could have someone who's good, who may have had a depressive time, maybe in college, maybe he lost his parents, maybe he lost a sibling, who knows, right? And he was prescribed some health medication for a mental illness, in quotes, because it was a rough time. But he's fine now. But now all of a sudden he's forbidden from owning a firearm the rest of his life and forbidden from having his natural right, being able to exercise his natural right to protect himself. I don't think that works. And that's our concern about tying the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Service records to the NICS database.
Which is something that came up also in our conversation with Bob Lee. Go ahead, Representative Shurtleff.
Well, I think Alex raised a very good point. We don't want to demonize those that do suffer from mental illness. Having a member of my own family who suffered with depression for years and now is perfectly fine because of medication, we've got to be very careful not to step over that line. But we know that there are some who suffer from mental illness that acts them, causes them to act in a manner that's antisocial and could lead to violence. And that's the ones who we want to be concerned about.
Although, you know, again, this most recent shooting in Newtown, there was, you know, some issues in the past, but there was no hospitalization or doctors or anything involved. So it's tricky, Representative Shurtleff,
it's
to really
gray area.
Know who's going to do what.
Exactly.
And taking away the rights of the law-abiding to try and protect those who may break the law, it is a failed solution. It hasn't been working, and I predict that if this is going to – if we're going to enact additional gun control, we're going to make the problem worse. And that's what we're seeing in Europe, and we're seeing in the places where there is stricter gun control.
Let's take a call from Londonderry. Rick is on the line. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm the president of the Londonderry Fish and Game Club. We're an 880-member club. We feature six ranges. And my question for Representative Shurtleff is this. I'd like to hit for him to explain the basis for putting in legislation to repeal Senate Bill 88, the Stand Your Ground law that was passed in the last session of the state legislature. And there's been a gross mischaracterization of that bill. It's been referred to as the ability to use deadly force. Nothing could be further from the truth. This is a use of force bill. In other words, under the prior legislation, a person was required to retreat if they can do so safely. And the arbitrary part of that was determining whether it was safe or not to do that. So basically, in essence, what this bill does is it removes the requirement to retreat. And, you know, use of force can be something as simple as restraining a person physically without any injury if they're attacking another person unlawfully, or it could go the other direction, whereas a person would use deadly force to terminate the actions of an attacker. So again, my question is, what's the basis for putting in a bill to repeal that?
Okay. And Rick, thanks a lot for calling in. Representative Shurtleff, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. And I appreciate Rick asking that question. And as a sportsman myself, last month I got my hunting and fishing license, and it was the 50th anniversary I'd been a licensed hunter in the state of New Hampshire, so I'm not opposed to firearms. I own long guns, rifles, shotguns, and handguns.
You know what, Representative Shurtleff, we're heading into a break, okay. And I want you to be able to take your time with this, so I'll let you respond after a break. Rick, thank you very much for that call, and we'll take more of your calls in just a minute at 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from GZA, Geoenvironmental, providing environmental geotechnical solutions that are proactive by design. GZA, Geoenvironmental, online at gza.com. And from Comcast Business Class, provider of Internet, voice, TV, and Ethernet solutions that keep pace with the growth of your business. More information at business.comcast.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Our goal is to leave a living legacy to organizations we love and respect.
Woolsey Conover of Holderness, New Hampshire, is a lifetime listener of public radio.
While we are here on this earth, it's our privilege to support them. And when we depart, we will have the joy and satisfaction of knowing that our support goes on. That's why we have established an estate plan that includes New Hampshire Public Radio.
For more information about NHPR's planned giving program, visit nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're wrapping up our three-day series on the conversations, possible lessons surrounding the Newtown shootings. We've looked at mental health. We've looked at violence in media. Today, we're looking at some of the conversations and debates over gun rights and gun control. Our number for you to join us with your thoughts is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Republican Representative J.R. Hole is with us. He's from Dunbarton. He's a board member of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. Steve Shurtleff is here, Democratic rep from Penacook, House Majority Leader, and retired from the U.S. Marshals Service. And Representative Shurtleff, just before the break, we had a caller, Rick, in Londonderry, who was taking issue with your bill to repeal New Hampshire's relatively new Stand Your Ground law. So go ahead.
Thank you. And I thank Rick for that question. As I mentioned, I am a sportsman. I am a hunter. I own firearms. So I'm not anti-gun. Last session, I served on the Criminal Justice Committee, before which Senate Bill 88 came before, that was New Hampshire version of Florida's Stand Your Ground bill. For the last 3 years, New Hampshire has been ranked the safest state in the nation, according to the FBI national statistics. Stand Your Ground was trying to solve a problem in the state of New Hampshire that just didn't exist. We had a law in the books, which I'd like to see us go back to, that served our state well for decades, and that's the castle doctrine, that a man or a woman's home is their castle, and you have a right to use deadly force there to defend yourself or your family. Under Stand Your Ground, this did give an individual the right to use deadly force any place they had a lawful right to be. Under the old law, that it said that you, if you thought you could retreat safely without escalating the situation, you should do so. But if you couldn't, then you had a right to use deadly force. That's why I want to see us go back to. There's other aspects of Stand Your Ground that I'm very much opposed to. Understand Your Ground. If a person uses deadly force and inadvertently kills an innocent third party, that family has no civil recourse. And that, to me, is intolerable. It just doesn't fit for New Hampshire. You know, the late Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. once said in a decision talking about the First Amendment, we have a right to free speech, but we can't yell fire in a crowded theater. And to me, Stand Your Ground is the equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. It just goes too far in giving an individual the right to use deadly force.
Too risky, in your
exactly.
opinion.
Exactly.
I know you have some thoughts, Representative Holt. Keep them real short, if we could, and we'll go back to our listeners.
Sure. So I bring up the last point about yell fire in a crowded theater. There, we're interacting with a business. This was talked about actually on the House floor, where the patron who pays the movie theater, in fact, to see a movie, okay, you're interfering with that contractual relationship. So the analogy doesn't fit. And this is not about we do have the safest state in the nation. We are, in fact, a very safe state. The issue that Stand Your Ground fixed was citizens having to pay legal costs to address being chased by the police, okay, legally afterward.
All right. Well, I think I hear another show in the works, so maybe we'll return to this bill once it really comes out in the legislature. But I want to leave it on the table for now and bring another voice into our conversation. This is Ted Kirkpatrick. He's director of Justice Works, a criminal justice research and development unit at UNH, which studies all kinds of crimes, including gun-related homicide. And Ted Kirkpatrick, thank you for being with us.
A pleasure, Laura.
Well, as someone who researches homicide, what stands out for you about murder committed with guns, especially in the context of this nationwide conversation that we're having?
It's a good question, Laura. We know that about 70% of all criminal homicides in the United States are committed with a firearm. And that's alarming, but I have to say that one of the things that's good news in the United States, and certainly in New Hampshire, is that the homicide rate has been declining rather precipitously for the last 20 years. In New Hampshire, criminologists measure safety and homicide by the number of homicides per 100,000 population. And in New Hampshire, it's one per 100,000 population. In the United States, it's between four and five per 100,000, but that's down by half in a 20-year period. So even as we focus on these tragedies like Newtown, Aurora, and elsewhere, it is in fact the case that, and surprisingly so, that gun homicide is, and homicide overall is actually down in the United States.
Now, I don't know if this is outside your area of expertise, Ted Kirkpatrick, but do you look at other countries, some of whom, like those in Europe, have stricter gun laws than we do? And if so, what do you find there?
Yep. That's absolutely true, that the United States has typically had a higher homicide rate than many other nations, particularly when compared to Europe. There are obviously other parts of the globe that have much, much higher gun and firearm homicide rates than do we. Ours is declining, and in some parts of Europe, theirs is increasing. So these comparative studies are informative, but I'm not sure right now that criminologists feel comfortable in explaining exactly what is happening and why.
In Europe, you mean, in terms of
in
the rising?
Yeah.
What types of guns do we most often see, Ted, in these dreadful mass shootings, whether it's, you know, Newtown or Aurora, Colorado, or wherever? What types of guns are typically used?
Right. Most often they are semi-automatic weapons, either handguns or rifles. It is absolutely the case that while we focus on these weapons, that the larger share of gun homicides are with handguns. And that's been true for many, many years. Slight decline in the last 5 years, but still, you know, three or four times as high as rifles are used. Now, when you're speaking of these mass shootings, the weapon of choice is a semi-automatic handgun or a semi-automatic rifle. And the reason is that it's an opportunity theory that, you know, you can kill so many more people with something that fires rapidly and has high capacity ammunition to use in that particular incident.
And I want to ask our guests in studio about that in just a minute. But one more question for you, Ted, if I could, please. You have no doubt been listening to, again, the huge national and statewide debate on this issue. Do you see any common ground between these two very different sides?
Well, I do. My co-director here at UNH of our research unit is Charlie Putnam, and I often tell people that Charlie and I are great friends and respect each other, but we disagree on just about everything, and we come from opposite sides of the aisle. But we're at work presently on a piece that helps to define some common ground that I think we can exploit. There are elements that I think that the left and the right can agree upon, that it once protects the guarantees under the constitutional amendment, but also helps us to address you know, the opportunities that people have to use these weapons that are you know, high capacity weapons and that show up in these shootings at Aurora and the mall shooting and Newtown. Tragic. I do think that the Newtown shooting was really a seminal incident in the United States, and I think partly because so many young children were victimized. And I think the age of those victims really struck a chord in the United States to prompt it to think in new ways about how we address the constitutional guarantee and right to bear arms.
Ted Kirkpatrick, good to talk to you, and maybe we'll follow up with you on some of that common ground work that you and Charles Putnam are doing. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much.
Ted Kirkpatrick, Director of Justice Works, a criminal justice research and development unit at UNH. One more time, the exchange phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Hull, Representative Shurtleff, I wanted to just very quickly follow up on what he talked about, the semi-automatic weapons that are most often used in these mass shootings, because, grimly enough, you can get more people that way. We've talked a lot, gentlemen, this hour about who can or can't, should or shouldn't. Let's talk for just a minute about the what, Representative Hull. And this is another idea that Joe Biden's been talking about, the vice president. Some limits on weaponry that is able to fire lots of bullets all at once and kill a lot of people in a very short time.
So just to make sure we're defining terms clearly, right? A semi-automatic firearm, okay, is a firearm that fires one bullet with each pull of the trigger, okay? This is a revolver. Technically, a revolver is a semi-automatic, okay, in the sense that when you pull the trigger, it's a different class within the pistols, but it is you pull the trigger, a bullet leaves. The same is true for a semi-automatic pistol. Same is true for a rifle and a shotgun, okay? In each of those cases, if they somehow auto-load the next cartridge, it is a semi-automatic. This is different than the military rifles. Military rifles, when you pull the trigger, there'll be a three-round burst. That's a machine gun. And effectively, these have been banned in the United States. Not banned, wrong word. These have been taxed, actually, since 1934 under the NFA.
So do these weapons exist in the hands of law-abiding citizens, unlaw-abiding citizens? Should these be perhaps restricted since they have such a capacity to kill?
They have been restricted. And they've been restricted. The NFA was passed in 1934. It was further increased through the 1968 Firearms Act, okay, and then again in 1986. And at this point, there is no additional manufacture or sale. The number of these firearms in existence continues to dwindle, actually. If they break, there are no replacements into the civilian market. So this is not the issue. The issue goes back to having a criminal justice system that when someone has committed a crime, they're addressed appropriately and not released early. There are other issues to be looked at. And as the caller said before, New Hampshire has one of the lowest crime rates. We also have one of the best set of gun laws that, in fact, is much better, in my opinion, than Massachusetts, which has 300% of our violent crime, or Connecticut, which has almost 400% of our violent crime.
Yeah, although they have bigger cities and more people and so forth.
Well, but per capita, using the same statistics that Kirkpatrick was in terms of violent crime per 100,000, we're one. Connecticut is 3.7. That's almost 370%.
So I think what I'm getting from you, and I want to hear from you too, Representative Shurtleff, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Hull, you really feel like let's not focus on the what, the gun itself. Let's focus on the who. Mm-hmm. We keep getting back to that.
It is the who. Back to the caller before about the car, right? If the car runs somebody over, we're not going to sue Chevy and Ford. We're not going to prohibit Chevy and Fords. We're going to talk about the individual who perpetrated the crime.
Here's an email that gets to that from Carla in Stratham. She says, Scott Lee had an AHA article in the Boston Globe this morning with a suggestion made to him by a retired Navy commander, require liability insurance for gun ownership. Carla says, we require increased insurance for swimming pools and trampolines. Why not guns? I wonder if people with a mentally unstable relative or friend would think twice about gun ownership if their weapon was stolen and then they were held accountable. She's got stolen in quotes there. Carla, thanks for the email. Can you address this, Representative Shurtleff, along with the conversation I just had with Representative Hull about we keep focusing on the who and the what should we be focusing on?
Well, let me just go back to your last question first.
Sure.
In the incident in Newtown, the shooter was using the civilian equivalent of an M16 that had a high-capacity clip. You know, I'm a sportsman, but I'm also a Vietnam veteran. I carried an M16 when I was in Vietnam. There's a difference between a weapon for sportsmen and there's a weapon for war. What that man had in Newtown was a weapon for war, and that's something that should not be in civilians' hands. That's something for the military. To get back to the question of liability, that's something I have to think very seriously about. I know most gun owners are very careful about making sure their weapons are secure to protect their family members and others, and I'd have to think twice about anything of that nature.
Let's take one more call if we could. This is Lincoln in Milan. Go ahead, Lincoln. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm just curious. My friend Rick mentioned to me the 1934 Tax Act that got the machine guns off the streets. One of the representatives just mentioned it, mm-hmm. and I'm really curious why it's been incredibly effective. I've never seen a machine gun in real life outside of a museum. Why don't we go ahead and just add these assault weapons to the same list that has Thompson submachine guns on it?
Okay. Lincoln, thanks a lot for the call. Representative Hull?
So I'm going to bring up a response to that as well as Representative Shirtless' comments. There is a difference between what is known as an AR-15 platform and an M16. An M16 is a firearm that has both a safe mode, a single burst mode, a three-round burst. That is not available to the civilians, and it hasn't been. In terms of what are known as black utility rifles, people refer to them as AR platform, back to the Armalite Corporation who helped develop this. These rifles tend to be very accurate, and they tend to be great going to the range for target shooting, and they're used a lot for target shooting. So I don't see any reason to go ahead and add these to any other registry when they're used in commonplace by large numbers of people for target practice.
Representative Shirtleff, if you want to jump in there.
Well, again, my concern, if it's got a selector switch on it that you can fire one round at a time, that's fine. But my concern is when you mix a combination of an AR-15 and a high-capacity magazine, that's when we see the damage that's been done across our country.
Well, and we have so many other callers, and I've got a pile of emails here that I didn't get a chance to get to. So I want to thank everyone who tried to join our discussion, and we will be following up on some of these issues in the days and weeks ahead. Here's one more email from David. He says, it's for you, Representative Shurtleff. Why are you pushing for these bills to ban private sales in magazines since neither law would have any effect on the violence you've cited? David says, aren't you using this tragedy as a cover to push for bills you've been trying to pass for years?
Bill used the word bills. I've only got one bill. I have no legislation.
That's the repeal your standard.
Exactly.
Ground.
I have no legislation dealing with the sale of magazines or any other firearm laws. And I believe a lot of these things need to be addressed at Washington, not in Concord.
You know, it's interesting. We had a panel of state legislative leaders on a couple weeks ago, and Terry Norelli said similarly to you. She said everybody's waiting for action at the federal level. Mm-hmm. Real quick, both of you, what do you think, Representative Hull? What do you hope that action coming out of Washington consists of?
No action out of Washington. I think this was not something delegated under the 10th Amendment to the federal government. It's clearly a state's issue. And I'm, in fact, hoping that New Hampshire starts looking at legislation to say we shouldn't be following the federal guidelines. We are an independent state. And what the federal government has taken over was never delegated authority. It's not in their domain to work in.
And you've got some gun bills that we didn't get to today in terms of permits and so forth. What do you hope comes out of this vice presidential task force, Representative Sherwood?
Well, I may be overly optimistic, but I think something positive will come out of the Biden commission.
All right. Both of you, I have the feeling we'll talk again. Thank you very much for being here. Representative Hull, good to have you. Thank you very
much
for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
J.R. Hull, Republican representative from Dunbarton, member of the Children and Family Law Committee, and a board member of the New Hampshire Firearms Coalition. And Representative Shurtleff, good to see you too. Thank you.
It's my pleasure as always.
Representative Steve Shurtleff, a Democrat from Penacook, House Majority Leader, retired from the U.S. Marshals Service. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a new book called Tax and Spend, exploring the long, deep American hostility toward taxes. Then, the exchanges are coming. Under the Affordable Care Act, New Hampshire is laying the groundwork for these marketplaces where consumers shop around for health coverage. And later, NPR's Dina Temple-Raston is here with tales of her beat covering counterterrorism. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Friday News Roundup and the Diane